Hey everybody, Double G here for the Fight Game Podcast. Before we get to the actual podcast, I just want to admit a mistake. I kept screwing up the date for Revolution. In my head, I'm thinking it's 2 weeks away, but it's actually next week. Dynamite and Rampage at the Cow Palace, where I am going, is actually next week. So when you hear me say 2 weeks, or I'm giving some idea that, you know, this show is actually not happening next week, apologies. I don't know what I was thinking. I'm looking at the calendar. I think it's the short February month that always screws me up here. So anyway, just want to make that mention because some of y'all are going to listen to this and go, what the hell is he talking about? He doesn't even know the date to this show. My apologies. Want to make that mention. All right, here's John and I. What up, everybody? This is Double G for the Fight Game Podcast. John LaRocca here as well. We're going to talk some AEW Dynamite. We're going to talk some Elimination Chamber. Not really Elimination Chamber, more the booking. I want to get John's thoughts of Triple H's creative as we head into his first WrestleMania, where he's the man in charge. We'll do our thumbs up, thumbs down segment. But before that, just want to remind folks, if you are interested in joining the Discord has been on fire of late. If you go to the Fight Game Media Twitter, you will see an invitation. If you want to shoot me an email, gg@fightgamemedia.com, I will send you a personal invitation. But it's been really fun so far. And then also, John and I are going to record our second episode of WCW 96, where we look at the full year of WCW in what is a game-changing year for the professional wrestling business. And and we even have a Discord channel for that show. And that is kind of been on fire. Like, people love WCW 96. Holy cow. Like, people who are our age, like, that was a major year for them in pro wrestling fandom.
For sure. It was a great year.
We'll give a little teaser here. But as you're watching Nitro 96, is that show not like pro wrestling television on crack or what?
Oh yeah, all that stuff was, even then, you know, led to 97. They're just throwing everything out there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. We can just see, it's like they're just reacting to what's on the other channel, and there are all these big matches out there right away, right? Like, hey, Road Warriors, all right, let's do the Road Warriors versus Sting and Luger, like, right off the bat, you know, instead of like rehabbing them to like make it where they're just destroying people, like, you know, like the Vault, you know. We'll talk about that when we cover them.
I was telling Andrew Zarian on We're Live Pal, I said, you know, this Tony Khan and Ariel Helwani stuff, like, you know, it's crazy, and you know, it's a wrestling war, but it is no Vince versus Bischoff in 96, man.
No,
there is just undercutting and real just beef, just real, like, I want these guys to fail so bad with all of my heart in there. And we'll talk about that, because I have a whole segment planned on Vince versus Bischoff. But all right, let's do our thumbs up and thumbs down. I kind of want to start a little negative here.
Okay.
Now, I'll bring it back, because there's a lot of really positive stuff to talk about in wrestling. The negative, the thumbs down of the week, you and I, and a few of our friends, Jeremy, David Rubio, JJ Williams from the website was there as well. We went to the New Japan show in San Jose, Battle in the Valley, at the San Jose Civic Auditorium, which I looked up, debuted in like 1936 or something like that. So this building is almost 100 years old. Now, we'll start with Friday night. Friday night, I go and pick up JJ from the airport, and we're hanging out. We're like, hey, do you want to go to the press conference? Big Dave set it up so that he and I could go, but then Dave couldn't go because he was preparing for the awards issue that comes out on Friday. So by the time everyone listens to this, the Observer should be out with the 2022 Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards. So he couldn't go. So just me and JJ, we met up with our friend, Baby Huey, who I talked to on this show a few weeks ago. And, you know, Baby Huey, he's a real media guy, right? He's a radio guy. He's like thinking, you know, a few steps forward. Oh, maybe I'll be able to get an interview with somebody. I got my gear, you know, never leave without your gear. He's got, you know, just phone. He's going crazy because he just wants to cover this thing. Like, you know, he thinks it should be covered. There's a journalist from the Fresno Bee who's sitting next to me. And I'm not exactly sure why he came. He doesn't seem like a modern day wrestling fan. He seems like a fan from, you know, 30 years ago, but he was there. And so we get there, we sit down, there's maybe 15 people there, and we sit down, and the person goes, "Oh, by the way, there will be no questions asked to the talent today." And I said, "Huh, so it's not really a press conference."
No.
The guy from the Fresno Bee turns to me and he's like, "Why the hell am I even here?" Said, I guess we're just here to take pictures tonight. So frustratedly, I was like, okay, like not like I would have asked like 20 questions, but just the opportunity. That's what makes these things pretty fun. And, you know, you maybe even get some information. So that goes on. The way that they did this press conference, it was really just an opportunity for them to cut promos on each other. Some of them were pretty good. I thought Zack Sabre Jr. was really good. Some of them, maybe not. Clark Connors kept reminding us this was the first time that he's ever done this. And I just continued to say, "No shit." And that's not a shot at him. It's just, you know, I was already sort of in a frustrated mood. And this guy was trying to figure it out on the fly. And he also came out and said, "Where's the energy? How come no one's cheering? This is wrestling." And I was like, dude, there's only like a handful of people here who aren't necessarily fans. Like, if you wanted fans, maybe they should have invited fans to this press conference. So
anyway,
I'm picking on Clark. He was fine. He had a good match next night. But so it happens. I was there mostly to see Mercedes. I kind of just wanted to see her in this environment. Great. She felt sort of bigger than life. Kairi, great. And then, of course, Tanahashi and Okada, both just bigger than life. Giant superstars. Great. But that was it. It was like 45 minutes and we were out of there. And then we went and grabbed some dinner. But not a press conference. Even worse than, I would say, the AEW Tony Khan scrums. Probably not as worse. Not as bad as the WWE version of it, though. Okay. So then, we go to the show pretty fired up, right? It felt special with having the Mercedes Moné match there. And for us, being able to see Tanahashi and Okada, even though it is the older version of this match, still it's special. And the stinking stream dies or isn't working. So we have to wait an extra 45 minutes for this show to start. And in my mind, I'm thinking like, are we not in Silicon Valley? Like, what's going on here?
Well, you said the buildings are 1936.
Okay. But what's the backup plan here? Yeah, like, where's the plan B? So
I know. We were out, right? They had the pre-show matches, and we were out walking around. We're going to grab a drink and use the restroom, whatever. Maybe catch up with a few people here and there real quick, and then head back in. But then we kept talking.
Yeah, we were just talking.
And I'm like, wait a second. Should the show be on by now? And
yeah,
crazy.
Okay, so I was kind of bothered, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to go check out this merch line. Everyone keeps talking about how long this merch line is. No better time than this show is delayed. So I actually missed the first match because you know what I did? I was like, I'm feeling a little rebellious here. I'm just going to watch this Roman Reigns, Sami Zayn match on my phone while the first match, which I heard was pretty fun match, is going on. Because, at the same time, I wanted to see what was going on in that. But last thing, this is the real part of my thumbs down. New Japan, you need to stop running this building. As much as I love this show being in my hometown of San Jose, you have Mercedes Moné in her first match outside of WWE. You have Kairi, the second IWGP women's title defense. And you have Okada and Tanahashi. And it was in front of 2,000 fans. Not, I don't know how many they could have sold if they, say, went to San Jose State. Could they have sold five? They might have been able to sell five. But this show, in the building, it felt small time when I think it could have felt like big time. And that was my main issue, is that those moments that happened on that show, they felt like really giant moments happening at a high school gym. Not really a high school gym, but it like, it's like sort of the presentation, right? Like, you know, I'm having you over for dinner, steak, potatoes, everything. Yeah. And then I serve it to you on like a garbage can lid or something. Like, it's just like, it's not, it wasn't, it wasn't the environment for what we saw and how they delivered. So that is my thumbs down New Japan Pro Wrestling running in San Jose. And I asked Rocky Romero, I'm like, is San Jose kind of the hub now? You know, he's like, yeah. And what I should have asked him is, are you going to run a building that was built in the last 40 years? That's what I should have asked him.
I wonder how much they will sell if they had the event center. You know, was there people upset that tickets are sold out? You know, is there a good amount of people? We don't know, right? I haven't really heard too many chatter on that, but
the only thing we knew is they had sold whatever it was before there was any matches announced. Let's say 1,500. Mm-hmm. Then they announced the Mercedes match, and then it immediately sold out. So that got us to 25. And then they added Okada and Tanahashi, but the building was already sold out.
That's the problem. New Japan, too. It's like they don't really announce stuff till after other shows end, right? Like, so there's a lot of like, we'll see. I don't know. I see the event center is cool. Perfect for wrestling, too, as well. I mean, I like the Civic Auditorium. It's a great venue for wrestling as well. But yeah, they need to maybe try to test the waters on a bigger building.
You know what? Sure. You know what Civic Auditorium is a great building for? Jeremy on Friday night went to Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah.
That, like, it's great for that. I also saw, what's that show that I keep forgetting the name of? The prank show?
Impractical Jokers. I was there.
Impractical Jokers. Yeah. I saw that there at the Civic. Great venue for that type of show. But when you're trying to present a pay-per-view wrestling event, man, we need to step our game up here.
Yeah. It's funny because I was going to have something. I had New Japan on my thumbs down list, or what you want to call it. Mostly for, I think, I get frustrated with New Japan when they come to the United States because they think like they have to cater to the United States fans. So they must throw out a hardcore match, a street fight. And I love Tom. You know, great guy, but to me, he had like the worst match on that show. You know, not saying it's not their fault, because it's their direction the company wanted. You know, he wanted Homicide and him to have a street fight, but I feel like they think us US fans want that stuff. We don't want that stuff. We get it Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Traditional New Japan Pro Wrestling.
We want New Japan Pro Wrestling. You know, I think Tom and Homicide would have had a hell of a match, just being a regular singles match, right? And it just, like I said, I'm not saying they had a bad match because they weren't good. It's just, and you even said it, you said it at the show, the crowd got taken out of it after that match. Like, and almost didn't, it felt like it didn't fit, right? And it felt like there was no heat in the audience for this match, right?
They set up that door spot, and then they went away from it for like five or whatever minutes.
Yeah.
And then the crowd just sat there waiting for the door spot, because that's when they knew they were going to be able to pop again.
Yeah. And also they were popping for weapons and the plunder. They weren't invested in this match of who's going to win and who's going to lose. And I don't know, they could use both those guys' talents better on this show. And that really frustrated me on that night. But overall,
I agree with you. I would have loved to see Filthy Tom. He can do his shtick in the beginning because he's a very entertaining guy. His character is very entertaining. We've seen this character going back to the UFC days. Like, this is just Tom, you know, shining up that Tom Lawler character from back in the day. And he could start the match, and maybe you start it and you kind of hold out a little bit. But then, you know what Tom is also Tom is also a really good wrestler.
Yeah.
Really. And so then you let him show off the wrestling, and that's what I would have wanted to see. You know, the shtick is fun. The hardcore stuff was not the best, even though Big Dave liked the match. I that was the match where I was like, you know, really the only time that night going like, are they getting the finish yet? You know, like that was my mentality. And it was one of the only matches where I thought, man, I'm getting tired.
Yeah, it's like, I remember, I think when they announced 15 minutes of Lawler and Homicide, we're like, oh my God, it's been 15 minutes. Like, you're just like, and it felt like you heard more cat calls from the crowd during that match and stuff. But yeah, it wasn't my favorite on the show. And then even Mercedes Moné and Kyrie didn't need that table spot that they did. It made no sense, you know, especially the tone after the match is over, after friends. Mercedes wins, it's like they're hugging, they're crying, they're like showing each other's appreciation to each other. And I'm thinking like, wait a second, Kyrie, Mercedes literally pulled the referee in front of you, tried to take you out to the outside and set up a table to break your back, right? And you're belting her in the middle of the ring. Like, it just was kind of weird. But I don't think that way. They don't think about that kind of stuff. Like, even like the placement of the table, it was under the stage, just hidden. No reason for it to be under the stage. You know, no, it wasn't spontaneous, right? It was like, so Mercedes even came off more as a heel because she, if we're looking at this as like a real thing, she had that pre-planned. She knows she wanted to take her out of the table. You know, it's just, the psychology is kind of goofy there, right? I mean, I thought it was a good match. A lot of people saying it's an all-time classic. Let's not get crazy. But it was a good moment and good energy from the crowd for sure.
All right, so my thumbs up is actually Mercedes, and I'm not going to disagree with you on what you just said, but I will say, from the perspective of the crowd, they were able to do that, and the crowd ate it up. Like, they were just into everything that Mercedes was doing in that match. And, you know, she came off as a giant star. I thought she had charisma coming out of her ears. And I also thought even better than the match was what she did with Okada after the show, because she kind of carried that segment with Okada. And I was a little worried about Okada. I was a little worried about, you know, are we going to see a little bit of uncool Okada here trying to dance? And he kind of left that, you know, but she carried that segment because she's got the personality to do it. So the actual wrestling match part of it, I think you have a very valid point there. And I know that you mentioned it on the Take It Home you did the other day.
It's just constructive criticism. I'm not bashing these ladies at all. Yeah. I'm just pointing out some of the psychological holes in their match, you know.
But I thought the way that the crowd reacted to both women, you know, Mercedes, obviously the bigger star out here, that the crowd was there. It was a Mercedes crowd. They paid money to see her. But she did everything she needed to do for that moment. And I was a little worried going in. Not that she was going to have a bad match, but we were watching the Tokyo Dome, and they had the thing where they were selling this match, and they kind of screwed it up. She also seemed very nervous on that stage, and she mentioned it. And she knows that there's pressure, and for her to come out in that match and just be over as she was, I thought it was really tremendous. Mm-hmm. It showed that, you know, for those of us who are really giant fans of her and are constantly saying, no, she's the one, she's the one, she's the one, I look at that and I go, why didn't AEW back up the Brinks trucks? Because that, what we saw on Saturday, is exactly what that division needs. Like, I think Jamie Hayter is the closest thing to maybe the total package for a women's wrestler in AEW. But Sasha would be immediately the perfect package, and she would immediately get Jamie on a level that she's trying to get to, that they're trying to get her to as the champion. So I know that it's just as easy as like, oh, Tony Khan, just pay money for her. There's contracts involved and how long she's going to stay and all of that. But that was a moment as much as I love San Jose, as much as I love New Japan Wrestling, that needed to be in front of 15,000 fans on an AEW pay-per-view. Maybe not the Chase Center necessarily, because they probably wouldn't have sold, but, you know, Chicago, where AEW's best market is, or, you know, maybe it probably isn't allowed to happen in WWE because she is a known WWE star. But yeah, that should have happened in front of 15,000 people at a big AEW show with the proper marketing and that moment, you know. So I kind of hope that they figure out a way to use her for Forbidden Door too. I think that would be really cool.
My guess is she'll be on that in June for sure. I'm curious to see how she does in a New Japan ring on a New Japan show, not a Stardom show. I think Stardom show, of course, they'd be very successful. The crowd will be really into it. They're there for women's wrestling.
Yeah.
But when you do the women's match on a traditional New Japan show, be curious to see the reaction to that match and stuff. Because it's just different, right, over there than it is here. And especially for New Japan, when they're not used to having women's matches on their cards. So it's to them, it's like it's a nice thing, but not the most important thing, right?
And they didn't even really allow Kairi to have much of a match at the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe Kingdom. But maybe this performance by both women, kind of opened their eyes to maybe giving them a bigger opportunity in Japan on the New Japan shows. But my thumbs up. I'm going to stick with the New Japan centric stuff. I got more individual performances kind of lumped up in one. I really liked watching Jay White's performance that night. He's just so good. I mean, he's just the small things he does, right? He's just brilliant out there. And I thought they had a really good match with him and Eddie Kingston, a really good match. And I'm watching Eddie Kingston, and I'm seeing this love from this audience, and you know, and then you left a little bit before us, right, after the show.
Yeah,
we Rubio and Jeremy and I started walking down a bit, and Brian too. Brian Rue was there. And there was Zack Sabre Jr. had a line of people doing autographs and taking pictures. We walked by them. And here comes Kingston out. And he's like the man of the people, dude.
Yeah.
Like, just like giving people time. You know, hey, how's it going? Like, you know, like your old buddy you see at the coffee shop, you know? Yeah, like, he's just. Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, man, this guy needs to be on AEW television.
He does.
Why is he not on AEW television? You know, it's cool to see him here. And it's cool to see that it's a great match. But. This guy needs to be on. They need him. They need him on that show. So, and then, you know, also, I thought Okada was tremendous. I thought Tanahashi was tremendous. You know, they did, you know, their match was good. It was the greatest hits of their rivalry. And I think Tanahashi, a few couple of near falls, got people believing. The audience was behind him. That was fun. So I want to point those three men out, because I should throw Kingston in there too. I thought he did a good job as well. So, yeah. Yeah, it was a fun night, you know, minus the hardcore match. You know, sorry, Filthy Tom, love you, man, but wasn't our favorite. But overall, I thought it was pretty good.
Since we're on the Jay White thing here, where do you think he ends up?
A lot of people keep saying WWE, but...
Could the Switchblade be the Switchblade in WWE?
I think he could be a version of it. You know, their spin on it, whatever that is. I think he's a Triple H guy. Like, Triple H likes a worker like him, because he can work. I think he will get over there, you know? So, yeah, I think he'll be successful. He's young, too. He's still in his early 20s, right? Or mid-20s, at least, right now, I think he is.
That's a good question. Should look up his age.
So, like, just, I mean, go...
He's 30.
30, still very young. Go for the money. Shoot, if it doesn't work out, he can, you know, New Japan will take him back and no big deal and all that. And AEW, I would say AEW originally at first, but then I worry about all these other guys they brought in. Yeah.
They got too many guys.
Too many guys. And then we've seen too many guys come in and like, oh man, this is going to be great. And 2 weeks later, they're, you know, just a non-factor. And I think that would happen again with Jay White, sadly. But I think I'd like to see what he could do in WWE. I think, especially with Triple H and their Korea side right now.
It would take them really getting behind him, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be Cody level, right? Because Cody level is a level that they do not usually get behind people as it is. It doesn't have to be Cody, but I think they do have to see him as special. They cannot see this as just playing keep away from AEW. They need to see that he is the goods and that this character can work on their television.
If they do sign him, I kind of hope that he goes to the Raw brand because they need, I think, more, you know, freshen up that the card up there. You know what'd be cool if I know Edge is winding down, right? I think he's coming up in his last few more months on his contract, I believe. I think he wanted, I think it's by SummerSlam. I think there's SummerSlams in Canada, I believe, right? Or something like that. I remember he did an interview saying he wanted to finish his career on this show at, you know, because I thought it was in Canada. He'd be a perfect guy.
I think SummerSlam's in Detroit or something.
Detroit?
Like that.
Or maybe somewhere in that. It'd be kind of cool if like that was, you know, Jay White be the guy to beat him, you know, or something like that. You know, that use
Edge can't lose, man. He has too much grit. He keeps telling us on TV. He's like, get off my lawn. I got too much grit. I got too much wisdom.
Yeah. He's good, though.
He's really good. I just think his character really good. Is annoying, man. His character drives me nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. I dig him and Beth together, though. You know,
well, I mean, the guy's serious about his job. This dude is 50 years old.
Yeah.
He's in friggin' great shape. He cuts, you know, these soliloquy promos where they just let him go out there and do it. Not my favorite promos, but I respect him a lot. I'm just not digging the character.
The cereal at the house, man. Beth came out for that Elimination Chamber match. My goodness, she had the old shoulders going and everything. She looked great. That was a fun match.
Yeah, yeah. All right, now I wanted to pick your brain. We have the opportunity now. We don't get the hot take of Elimination Chamber. We don't get the immediate reaction because of when we record.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have the opportunity to kind of like go, okay, you know, this thing happened on Saturday. We're able to watch it. We're able to digest it. We're able to hear other people talk about it.
Yeah.
Now, you know, several days passed. We got to see what they did on Raw. What is your ultimate thought on Triple H's booking for that main event at WrestleMania? His first opportunity to have a WrestleMania, you know, have WrestleMania be his baby in a sense. And maybe his last, depending on if they get sold. So this is I'm assuming. Well, I'm just assuming that this is like really special for him, right? Because he's like saying, look, I can do this. Like this is I'm really good at this, and here's his opportunity. And he stuck by the plan of Roman and Cody as your main event. So what did you think of the whole deal?
I watched the main event finish at the in-advance show. I think it was kind of funny. I think between the first match, right, and the beginning of Fred Rosser and Kenta, most phones were up in the air, not taking pictures, but watching the Roman Reigns, Sami Zayn finish. I think the move is the right move is to continue on with Roman versus Cody. I strongly feel that Sammy, it would have been a great moment, a special moment. But just like Kofi Kingston was a special moment when the title, I think it would quickly we'll be waiting for when he's going to lose it. You know, I don't think Sammy's a long term champion. I know people are really into him right now, but I still think Cody is the guy at this point to beat Roman, and you don't want Roman to lose to Sammy and get it back quickly to lose to Cody, because it won't do nothing for Cody if that happens. So,
well, here's the hypothesis of it all, right? Now we're talking about it, and it hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
But what we don't know is if Sammy does beat Roman, are you behind him as the champion? Do you believe in what has happened? Because I'll compare this to yesteryear. Rey Mysterio wins the title at WrestleMania. We're going like way back now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Vince did it for that moment, like you said, like the Kofi moment. But immediately he was like, now I'm going to prove you guys wrong, why this was the worst thing. And he's throwing Rey in these matches with these terrible wrestlers, Great Khali and all these guys. And he's just trying to get the belt off of Ray to say, look, I'm always right at this. The Kofi thing, similar, right? Kofi wins. Kofi had a run through up until the summer, I believe. Mm-hmm. But they never got behind him like he was the next guy. They got behind him as if, yeah, he's a good wrestler and the fans are kind of behind him, but we have other plans. Like they did not change their plans for him. To an extent, same with Daniel Bryan. When Daniel Bryan won the title, the idea was not we're going to get behind him long term. And so if Sammy does win that match, it has to be because Triple H goes, we're getting behind him. He's a made guy. He is our champion. And thus, you know, even if he loses to Cody, there's more pieces to this puzzle that we can tell to keep him there. And ultimately, that's not what was in their plan. So I know, like, I heard Wrestling Observer Radio today, and Dave and Brian were kind of making fun of the idea that you couldn't do the title change. I would be happier if they didn't belt Sammy, thinking what they usually do with people who they don't get behind, because that could hurt him more than help him. And I feel I thought he proved on that stage he's a main eventer. You can trust him. The fans love him. If Cody is your champion on Raw, Sammy could be your top babyface on SmackDown, and let's go.
Yeah. I think, I don't know how long Sammy would last in that. I think people just get, he'll eventually cool off. I don't know if he'll sustain it.
Does he cool off because of the booking, or does he cool off because of the fans?
Once this thing, the bloodline ends, I think he'll cool off, you know. But I like what they're doing. They're still kind of having some mystery with Jay. They're having some mystery with Owens and Sammy, right? Because they went through their issues. And so I think they have that to kind of continue on with that soap opera that has been so successful this year.
Yeah.
And I think Triple H is right. If he's going to put the belt on Cody, he needs to win it from Roman, and he needs to be a Roman that has never been beaten in, or hasn't been beaten in 3 years or whatever it is. Right. So I think long-term Cody's better as the champion. And I hope to God they don't split the belts up again. We're not going to go through that, are we, again?
The future is hazy, right? Because we don't know how much Vince is involved right now and how much he'll be involved in the future. Because that'd be immediately what he would do, or what he would want to do.
But I would prefer or maybe not. Maybe he liked the idea of...
I like it the way it is.
Yeah, me too. So we shall see. But yeah, I think the call was made correctly. Blimey Chamber, I thought overall was a pretty fun show. I don't know what you thought of it.
Good show. That is a good show.
The women's match had good moments, had some funny moments, had some bad moments. I like the mixed tag match. The mixed tag match was fun. The men's lift chamber I thought was really good. I didn't like how they got Logan Paul in the cage. Like the whole, I mean, the cage is opening anyways. Like you could have.
To let guys out who lose.
Exactly. Like, I mean, Montez could have taken a little slower than usual time, you know, to get out, but not that much for the matches. Takes the total.
They love telegraphing stuff, right? They love, like, they'll telegraph it and make it, like, deliberate, which is kind of the opposite of how AEW would do it.
I would have had... You know, some attention to Montez Ford being his bell rung there and not looking the best. And they make mention like, oh, man, he'll get the medical attention he needs. And you kind of see them open the door, but then now the camera swings because Theory and Rollins will still be wrestling. And then out of the shot, you see Logan Paul. Here he is. Boom. Does that, you know, the flippy clothesline in the ring. Boom. Oh, my God. Where'd he come from? And then he kind of. Then you show a quick highlight. Well, there's that camera shot of him sneaking in the cage as they're trying to get Montez Ford out. So it just died when, like, we had Leary and Rollins both looking concerned for Montez. It just kind of died for me at that point. But I like the idea, like getting Logan Paul in there to cost Rollins the match, but I just didn't like the execution of it. I thought they were too smart for their own good at that point.
And then Brock and Bobby was just one, that's two, three, guy. Not it.
I was digging that, damn.
1-2-3 nutted.
I was digging that match. The whole, like, you know, I'm like, oh, this is fun. Sometimes you just need the two dudes just to beat the hell out of each other. And then, like, low blow, I'm like, what the hell? So I think, I'm assuming they're going to do a match 4 at WrestleMania. And I think a lot of the challenges to Brock Lesnar has kind of been kind of just, you know.
Okay, but you heard the match that
almost
trying to put. And yeah, at that moment, I was like, wait, Vince is back. Omos and Brock. That's a dream Vince match.
Maybe, but maybe Triple H just said to get the old man off his legs. Like, hey, dude, just I'll give you one match, whatever you want to book.
Yeah.
He's like, Brock and the Giant. But not that giant. We don't have him anymore. We got, oh, yeah, whoever the tallest guy we got.
The Vince match. They should just, they should call it the Vince match, the Vince McMahon Invitational. Oh, all right. So let's talk about Dynamite last night. And, you know, I want to take it again, like we did last week, sort of with the eye towards Revolution, which we'll both be at. You know what we should do? Because Revolution is on a Sunday night.
Is it Sunday?
I think it's a Sunday night.
Oh, wow.
It would be fun to maybe do a recap show like Monday. And, like, you know, maybe we just have two shows that night. Because by the time we get to talk about our experience at Revolution, our live experience, it might kind of, it's, you know, it's already going to be like 4 days away. So, you know, it may be fun to do like a short recap of the Fight Game podcast on Monday night. Maybe we'll do that. We'll see. We'll see if we have time.
It depends if I go to Revolution, though. I'm hoping to, but my wife leaves out of town the next day. So, and I can see.
Yeah.
You can't go anywhere without me.
She's going to want to hang out. We should just bring her to the pay-per-view.
No, not want to hang out. No, she's going to get her stuff done and make sure I'm on daddy duty, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
well, we'll figure it out. But I just think, because that experience, I think it's going to be an experience, and there's going to be some positive and negative to that show. The negative is going to be, I just sense that crowd's going to be a little disappointing. I don't know. I don't know why. Some of it is the ticket sales.
You know, I think the people there
will be a smaller crowd. I saw the, you know, what they're doing to some of those tickets to just, you know, really, they're really lowering the price on them.
Well, look what I got for Rampage and or Dynamite and Rampage, right?
Yeah.
I mean, combo pack. I mean, that's not good.
Yeah. Well, you know, and shout out to at JAF Geezer on Twitter, because he couldn't go to the show. He actually lives in north of San Francisco, but something happened to his car. So he's like, hey, I got this ticket. Do you want it? And I was like, yeah, I'll find someone. And I was like, hey, let's see if John wants it. So
yeah,
thank
so
you
much.
To him. He joined our Discord today, too. I told him to join. Awesome. As a thank you. So AEW Dynamite, I kind of had it as, what are the bigger things that happened on this show? Mm-hmm. And just kind of wanted to talk about what you thought about them. So, I mean, first off, I thought Wheeler Yuta and Orange Cassidy had maybe the second best Orange Cassidy match I've ever seen before. He really stayed away from the goofy stuff in this match. Mm-hmm. It really felt like a fight, which I really liked, because under the guise of, you know, he's of his character, I do think he has some really good, he has the ability to have really good matches. I personally am not a fan of the shtick. I know a lot of people are a fan of the shtick, but when I saw him in that match with Wheeler Yuta, I was like, man, this is a really fun opener for two young guys. And Wheeler Yuta was a killer, and unfortunately he had to lose. I think they were only a few minutes away from the time limit too. He had to lose, but they got whatever story they're trying to tell with the Blackpool Combat Club and the best friends and all that stuff. But from a wrestling match standpoint, I thought that was the best match on the show.
I like the first part of it when they were grappling and stuff, or not, you know, they're changing holds, and then when Claudio comes out and slaps Yuta, that was good. I thought it may have went to a little bit too long, you know, but then Orange Cassidy did start doing his shtick, right, with his arms and his hands in his pockets.
He did a little bit of it.
And then it just looks silly when you do that in the corner and Wheeler Yuta starts smacking you in the face, still like punching you in the face. I don't know. It is whatever. But it wasn't as bad as, you know, a lot of the stuff we see from Orange Cassidy. But I guess Blackpool Combat Club's going heel, right? That's the
how are they babyface is really my question.
Like, I know. I
think John Moxley's ripping this guy's head apart in the main event. I was like, how is he a babyface?
Well, Moxley's been a babyface for what, 3 years or more now? It's like he's got to change something up, and I just can't take Claudio as a heel. He just seems like the nicest guy.
Yeah.
You know, like even when he was kind of, you know, smacking Yuta around, I felt like there's a smile behind that. That face he's trying to make, you know. Yeah. And it was okay.
All right, so Jericho and Starks, they had their situation, and so I'm gonna say, first and foremost, what we saw last night on Dynamite, why did we need to see the stuff before to get there? Which is, it's really silly in hindsight, I think. Now, some of this is we're trying to book this angle and we have ideas and we have a long time and we're trying to be creative. But why did he have to do the gauntlet stuff if he is this smart to manipulate Jericho into the match as it is? Like, that other stuff felt like stupid and a waste, right?
Yes. I felt the same way. I thought this was a total... This is stupid, I thought. And I could tell, like... You know, this is Jericho's idea. You can tell he probably thinks this is really clever, but it wasn't. I thought it was just silly. I was like, why did we do all this to get to this? And this is the payoff. Well, it's the payoff would be the pay-per-view match, but this is the big, oh my gosh, leading into the pay-per-view match. Pfft, lame. I don't know. I hope, God, for goodness sakes, let's hope Starks goes over on Jericho at the pay-per-view, please, right? I can't imagine them putting Jericho over, but I mean, they need new stars, and Starks comes out and he just is a star, man. People want to get behind him. So let's do it.
So that was the next thing I wanted to ask you, which is, now I know that you're not confident in Jericho really shining him up to go to the next level. I know that you mentioned that last week, that you're not confident that happens, but I think you have two opportunities here. Now, I'm not a fan of the last 2 weeks of Adam Cole, because he comes back fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last 2 weeks, I think you've already made him feel stale in 2 weeks. Now, last week was, he's talking to Renee. I think it was Renee.
Yep.
And he's like, yeah, I really have no announcement. And then this week, his announcement is that he's going to be on a TV show, when he is already on a TV show, and this, we're supposed to care about this other show that he's on. And then he says, oh, by the way, that, you know, that same night that show debuts is when I'll be back in the ring. I was just like, oh my God, like, this guy should have been wrestling in the pay-per-view against someone really good and getting a big win and ascension and all that. And now some of it is, you know, he still has to probably for real, like in real life, cross some threshold with the concussion thing. So maybe that's the reason, but man, like that interview that he did when he came back, that is the trajectory to get him to where you need to get him. And then he beats somebody good and he's just on that roll and the fans are behind him. And I just wish these last 2 weeks of TV did not happen for him. And Eddie, Ricky Starks, but you mentioned Eddie, and I wanted to bring Eddie in too, because I think he is a third person in this wheel, though he is a little bit more stale because we've seen him. But those three guys, you need to find one babyface star out of the three for a main event level. And if you can, you should, all three of them. Like, all three of them should be babyface main eventers. Within the year, I just don't know if I have faith in that that's going to happen. But those would be the three guys that I would ascend. Talking about this reality thing, All Access. Eddie was, I think he tweeted it because he's in it, and he tweeted it, and he was just like, you know, I don't like cameras and all that stuff. And so my hope is that he gets something out of the show. Cause like you said, man of the people, his personality is just fantastic. If that shines in the show, you need to use that for your pro wrestling show. And we need to see Eddie Kingston and get that run that we've always been, you know, for the last 3 years, we've been talking about this Eddie Kingston run. That would be great. The Mick Foley, you know, sort of the title win like that, that could still happen, especially if you do something on this TV show. So we need some new baby faces that could be stars. And those are the three that I'd pick.
We'll see if they can hold that audience too, that people can stick around and watch that. I think it'll do well the first week, but we'll see by week three how it does. You know, I don't know, it'll be as boring as Cody and Brandy, but like, you know, there's a little more people at play here. There's a little more personality. I mean, you know, Cody is a good person. You know, I mean, it just didn't work that show at all. I'm gonna watch it because I really want to see Adam Cole's journey with the concussions and that way the concussions issue he had and all he had to deal with. But I'm not confident that Ricky Starks will come out of this in a better place, because a lot of people who work at Jericho and AEW haven't really came out of it a better place. Eddie Kingston, for example, he didn't come out.
And he beat Chris.
And he beat Chris in the opener. Guess what? Chris Starks beat Chris Jericho in the opening match too. MJF has his lowest point of his time in AEW. was with Jericho, right? Orange Cassidy stayed the same. Didn't really, you know, was up for a bit with Jericho, featured a lot, and then kind of was there after that. So we'll see. What did Starks call him? The clout? Jericho called the clout vampire.
Is that what he called him?
Yeah, he called him the promo, which is pretty funny. So we'll see what Chris Jericho goes to next. But look at Action Andretti. I was asking, like, where's Action Andretti at? And apparently he was on Rampage, lost to Sammy. So that superstar that Jericho is supposed to make is probably not going to happen. So.
Nope.
Which I didn't think was going to happen either.
One more thing on the reality show, which is, now there are people who understand reality TV very well. And our buddy Larry Caution, who you and I had on this show years ago talking about when he saw Ron Simmons win the championship for Big Van Vader live in person when he was a kid. He's a giant reality TV show guy. And he said, this show cannot be an extension of AEW Dynamite. You cannot have the same crowd who watches, the same audience who watches this TV to then build off of that show, because it's just the same people.
Yeah.
He said, you need to put it on a different night. You need to put it in prime time. You need to hope that a more casual audience finds it earlier in the night rather than, you know, at 8/11 or no, 7/10, you know, which is the time slot it would be at. And I completely agree with him. But what I wonder for the Turner side is they just want to hold those 3 hours. They want to hold that audience for those 3 hours. And this is why I keep thinking, I hope it doesn't happen. It's kind of in the back of my head that we're going to get a third hour of Dynamite.
Let's hope not.
I just feel like, hey, you know, you guys want this sweet TV renewal here. You know, how about scratch each other's back here? You give us a third hour of Dynamite. I don't know anything.
So can we get rid of Rampage?
I have no inside information on that. It just sort of feels like some of the things that I've read, that they really want to hold that third hour. Power Slap, they've put in there. Now it's going to be this AEW show. The best thing to hold that third hour would probably be a third hour of Dynamite. So I agree with Larry. And you know, the other thing about this is I keep mentioning this show, the F1 show on Netflix, Drive to Survive. That show had a big part into accelerating F1's business. They got a brand new TV deal. The Liberty Media, their stake in F1, like, it's just it's been great for them. And a lot of it has to do with how good that TV show is. And so the blueprint is there for All Access to kind of be this show that can help drive business a little bit. But so far, I'm not sure based on what we've seen.
Yeah. And like, I remember when Total Divas came out, like first like few years of that show, like a lot of people talk about, I've heard a lot of people like a lot of my wife's friends and stuff, and they talk about reality shows all they watch. And Total Divas was like, would come up a lot. I'm like, you guys watch that? They watch the wrestling show, and they're like, no, we just watch the reality show. They don't like. I don't know how much it translates, you know, too much to new fans, but
you know, it reminds me of when we went to WrestleMania in Santa Clara, and gosh, mm-hmm. it's so long ago, and it's like 8 years ago. How was that show 8 years ago?
Wow.
I remember my sister and my brother-in-law. They ended up going at the last minute. You know, they got like euchre seats. Because they decided last minute. And so my sister, you know, being related to me, like she kind of knew about wrestling. She knew about Hogan. She was a big Miss Elizabeth fan. My favorite memory of her wrestling fandom was watching WrestleMania 8. WrestleMania, was it 8? What was the one WrestleMania 8, because it was Hogan and Sid Justice in the main event, and Papa Shango comes out, and then the Ultimate Warrior comes out. She hears that music and she goes, "The Ultimate Warrior!" Like, she was so excited. Like, you know, she was, gosh, in 1991, you know, she was like 12 years old or whatever. So like she understood like why wrestling was popular. But when she told me why she went, or and why, you know, she wanted to go with her husband, she was like, "Oh yeah, I watched Total Divas. I really like Total Divas." I was like, "Really?" I was like, "You grew up watching like superstars of wrestling and pay-per-views with me, and that's the reason?" So to your point, that audience, now does it mean that, you know, more women are going to watch Dynamite and Rampage or go to shows or buy pay-per-views? Who knows? But from a popularity or a branding standpoint, it's probably going to be good for expanding their audience. Now, does that turn people into ticket buyers? Maybe not, but just the awareness factor, people are going to know. You know, that's why I think, I hope Jungle Boy's on that show, because he could probably, now,
he's Tony Khan's on it, I hear.
Is Tony Khan on it?
Yeah, I don't know if he's like, I mean, I think he'd be popping in and out.
Now, I've seen a lady friend of Tony Khan's. Now, this is when we first did stuff, and she should be on that show. I don't know if if she and Tony Khan are still an item. I haven't seen her since then, but like, if that's like, yeah, she could have been on that show.
But, I hope the clip of him giving direction to Saraya, Tony Storm and Sky Blue and Ruby Soho, what they need to do after the match, let them all look at each other like, what are you supposed to do? That's what we got on the show. It was so confusing. Everyone looked at them like they had no idea what they're doing in that match.
By the way, can we petition Sky Blue to change her name to Sky Green, and then she can earn the name Sky Blue when she gets a little better? That poor woman, she should not be wrestling on television. Well, look, maybe not on Dynamite. I feel so bad, because you can just see her, like, I don't know if it's counting or, you know, what do I gotta do? Like, she's just like thinking it so much. You can just watch her and you're like, oh, she's thinking about what's the next thing she's supposed to do, rather than like feeling that moment that she's supposed to be in.
It was the best match, and but everyone was off in that match, though, not just her.
Not her fault at all. I just think, like, you know, in the whole scheme of things, like, we've seen a lot of her. And what they've been doing so far hasn't really been working, because I haven't seen her get the reps thing that we've always talked about. And on TV, like, she should be getting better, 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 better. But she seems to, you know, incrementally get better, but not as much as I thought. Okay. Jack Perry. Christian comes out. Jack Perry's beating this dude up. And of course, at the end, he looks like a dumb baby face and gets screwed again.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I can take of Jack Perry, the dumb baby face, because his pops, Dylan McKay, was not taking L's on screen like that.
Yeah.
Dylan McKay in 1990, you know, was one of the most famous celebrities to young people in the world. Mm-hmm. So Jack's got good genes, but if he keeps eating these L's on television, we're losing opportunity here.
And it's the bad booking he's getting, right? Like, I thought it was cool when out of the blue, here comes Jungle Boy attacking Christian. They started fighting, and it just kept going, and there's no one out there to stop them. And then once I saw that, I'm like, oh, it's not going to be good. And it just took forever. It took forever. You have Jack threatening to, you know, explode Christian's head on the stage. No one's trying to stop him from doing that. Then he's like, can't do it. He's like, he can't, after all this, all the stuff he said about his dad, about his mom, all of a sudden he has some remorse. Like, what? And then he gets nutted in the balls. Like, might as well just freaking castrated poor Jack Perry right there on stage.
That's what I felt they did.
And they did. And at the same time, it all looks stupid anyways, because like I said, no one came out. No one stopped Christian or Jack. And then late on the night when MGF and Brian had their moment, the whole locker room fucking, you know, cleared to stop them from fighting each other. But, you know, it's okay if Jack Perry just, you know, just brains freaking Christian on stage. Yeah, no big deal. Stupid.
Okay. They did the tag team battle royal.
No.
The winners, once it got down to, I mean, I couldn't think of who was going to win necessarily, but once the Lucha Bros were out, I was like, okay, there's really only one team that can win this match.
Once the Lucha Bros out, I had a feeling it was going to be Jeff and Jay Lethal for sure.
Now, I am of the opinion that the more we see Jeff Jarrett on television, the heat is going to be bad heat, and it's not going to work out. In this situation, if you're going to Vince Russo this tag team match and force two other teams in it for no reason whatsoever, I'm actually okay with Jarrett and Lethal being in it because they will be good in that situation. They won't be doing diving crazy things and crashing into stuff and the camera not knowing what to shoot. Like they will be doing their role as good professional wrestlers for whatever that match is going to be. But also, I'm fine with the sympathy for Jeff Jarrett being in this match, especially if you're Tony Khan. You just went to Jerry Jarrett's funeral. Let's put Jeff on this pay-per-view as a, you know, as a thank you or whatever. Like, Jeff Jarrett, the audience knows him. He's good. Yeah. But for me, the biggest thing is, you know, I don't know if you think this, we mentioned this before, but Jay Lethal's the most underrated guy in the whole company. And so for him to be on television on a pay-per-view, I think is a good idea. So that's why I wasn't too bothered with them winning this match.
Well, they could be on the pay-per-view. They don't have to be in this match. It just doesn't, I feel bad for the Acclaim. It's like this big pay-per-view match and they got to share with, you know, two other teams. It should be just them and the guns for the titles. It just,
that's what it should be.
Yeah.
That's why I said and the reason why I say Vince Russo is because that was Vince Russo's thing is like, oh, you know, why have two good wrestlers when we have these other two guys and, you know, we can add them in and they could be on the pay-per-view. Like, you know, because the reality is if Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal were not on in this match, they're probably not on the show or they're on the pre-show.
Yeah.
You know, against Top Flight or somebody. So
that's fine.
You know, this is a way to get him on the show, I think.
And what's with the use of Mark Briscoe coming out there just being crazy and chasing Mark Sterling? Didn't we learn anything from Wardlow and Mark Sterling that Mark Sterling does not get anyone over? So, I mean,
it's like doggy paddling in a swimming pool. It's like we don't have anything for him right now. Yeah, Here's how we get him to doggy paddle. So he doesn't, you know, so he's just until we figure out what the next thing is. But at first I thought, I was like, oh, Mark Briscoe's gonna win this whole thing by himself, but then it didn't. It wasn't that. So
just
quickly, I was like, "Oh, why did this happen?"
You do the tribute match, his late brother, and then you take him off TV for a while until you have a plan. And my plan would be that Owen Cup, they do it again, he would win that sucker, you know. Yeah, and then
great idea.
And once you announce that he's one of the participants in it, and he's all elite now, and he's not going to be, you know, on an ROH guy. He's finally going to be on, you know, cable television, and you know, and maybe you can kind of show him on the ROH pay-per-view retiring those tag team titles. But again, that's on a smaller scale. It's on their own little pay-per-view. But when the main audience sees him again, it's announcement for the tournament, and he starts winning the tournament, wins the matches in the tournament, and makes it to the finals in May and wins the tournament. But I just think this is, oh God, I feel bad because like,
well, maybe they have that something. Is maybe that is the big idea, right? But they can't really start the tournament until after this upcoming pay-per-view. So it's either ice him or try and get him into something. Like, I don't know.
I mean,
it's just so many. They just have so many guys.
Taking him away is not icing him. It's taking him off is make people miss him again, right? And be happy to see him back. You know, I mean, it makes sense. He would take time off to mourn his brother or get, you know, help with the family, all that kind of stuff. So you could tell that story. But this is just going to be this hurt me because I felt like they have something special in Mark. He's a very unique guy, very charismatic guy, has a story that people can get behind and understand and root for.
Yeah.
And now he's chasing around Mark Sterling.
All right. Last thing I wanted to mention about this show, they built up to Jon Moxley against Evil Uno in the main event. This was not the 30-second beatdown that I was hoping for. Once I saw it was in the main event, I was like, oh, we're getting a longer match than I wanted. Yeah. Poor Evil
I kept
Uno.
Fast-forwarding the entrances, and I was like, oh, maybe it's going to be short. Maybe it's going to be shorter. And like, no. I'm like, oh, damn.
Now, I don't want people to take this as body shaming in any way, because this is not what I mean. But this guy is in the main event of AEW Dynamite. We haven't seen him at this level in a very long time. From what I remember, Dark Order was in some main events back, you know, during the Brody days. Mm-hmm. He himself, in a match, I can't remember the last time he was on this stage, and they had him running. He was jiggly. Like, I would have just like, can we put a t-shirt? So this guy looks menacing. I don't want to think of like, oh, this guy just looks unathletic and not in great shape, you know, during this match. Like,
get the old Mabel top on him.
Something that would have been better for him. Like, yeah. Again, I'm not trying to body shame anybody. I'm just saying this is his spotlight, and the presentation for him was kind of a joke. And the match went too long. I know there's a lot of people who liked it because they like Evil Uno. Definitely a lot of blood in this match, but the whole thing, the whole reason to have this match, because you're advancing Hangman and Moxley. Mm-hmm. So you had an opportunity again. How are we getting to kick-ass Hangman? That guy's got to be in there somewhere. We need to see that guy. He needs to be a top baby face again. I want to feel like he's the man. So in the interview with Evil Uno, Evil Uno just basically yelled at him. Just cut him off and yelled at him. And I was like, wait, who's like the A1 here, and who's the A2? And then so Moxley and you know, they're doing the thing, and Evil Uno's bleeding and this and that. And so this has been the story of Hangman, which is Moxley wrestles this long match, sweaty, tired, and that's when Hangman attacks him. Now, some may think, oh yeah, well, he had a reason to attack him. I think first and foremost, he had a reason to tend to his friend who was dying on the floor in a pool of blood, and he didn't, and he just went right at Moxley. I thought that made him look a little chicken shit, and I just don't like the booking of Hangman, because he needs to be an ass kicker. And he does not come across that way. And this is this is a big moment for him.
Maybe he's just not in that guy. You know, could not be in him. He comes out with barbed wire in his hand. Like, just Where do you get that? You know, like, just, I don't know. This match too, and I agree with you. I you know, I'm not body shaming Inoue at all. It's not nothing to do with his body, honestly. It's the mask. It's his name. He doesn't strike fear. He's not like a scary dude, you know. He's a parody of an evil masked wrestling guy. That's what he comes off as. No one believes him as anything more than just a parody guy. And he's not scary. He's not Abdul the Butcher. He's not the Sheik. He's not Brody. He's just this goof in a mask. And you're right. I think Mox should have wiped the mat with him even more. I don't think Mox should have took two pile drivers from him. You know, he could took a couple little punches and a couple little kicks from the guys trying to fight, but I think Mox should just beat the crap out, took his mask off, stuffed it down his throat, and just stomped his face until Paige came out. But we got what we got, and I was pretty surprised the show did a million viewers. I saw this card, and I'm like, man, is anyone want to watch this? Because nothing for me as a running on the card made me think, oh man, I got to stick around for this, you know?
Yeah. No, so a couple of reasons, right? No NBA. NBA didn't start back up until today. Mm-hmm. The challenge is effectively over. There's a reunion show. So, you know, the competition was lesser, but still, you know, the audience is there, right? Like, you just, what that rating shows me is that there is an audience who will watch the show if it is more important than some of these other shows. And they just got to make it more important than some of those other shows.
Yeah.
You know, hey, DVR the basketball game. DVR the challenge or whatever. I guess Survivor's starting up again, so that'll be a tough one for them. But prioritize. Let's do good enough angles and have big enough stars to make those fans prioritize the show. Because when the competition isn't there, they show up.
Yeah. We talked about it. When you remember Sunday Night Heat, we talked about it during our Raw 98 review. Like.
Mm-hmm.
That show did really well early on, not because it was just a new show, because they threw Stone Cold Steve Austin on it. They had The Rock on it. They had Mankind on it, right?
Their angles from Monday led into Sunday, which led back into Monday on Raw.
And then Rampage, like if we look at Rampage, a lot of people are like, well, that was on a different time. And it was. That had an effect. But if a show is hot, a show is hot, and people will find it, right?
Last year to year in the same time slot, they were way down from what they did last year. So,
that show was rough. I still can't watch it. I still can't even get through a whole episode of Rampage. You know, I try to start here and there, but I just can't do it. I can't do it.
All right, that is it for us tonight. But I will be back. I'm supposed to be back with Big Dave tomorrow, probably in the afternoon, because I think we're going out with Big Dave for dinner tomorrow night. So we've got to wrap that Wrestling Observer Radio up early so it doesn't interfere with the dinner plans and the missus who are looking forward to it. So, so I'll be back with Dave. And also the awards issue. I know he's been working really hard on the awards. Our buddy Nick Mahmood, this is a funny story. So Dave, this was last week. Dave is texting me. He's going, hey, have you heard from Nick? And I immediately thought, oh no, what happened to Nick? Like, oh my God, like I need to text Nick. And he's like, oh no, Nick is helping me count ballots and I haven't heard from him. I was like, okay, God, you know how to set this thing up and get me really, really scared that something happened. So then I reached out to Nick. And he's like, oh, yeah, like he went back into his spam folder and he saw some emails from Dave. So he may have accidentally hit the spam on Dave's email address. But so I put them back together. I was like, you need to reach out to Dave because he's really worried about these ballots that you may have trashed on accident or you're just not getting back to him or something. So, yeah, that was funny. But all right. Yeah. So we'll be back next week. And this is the last Dynamite before the Dynamite that you and I will go to. So in two weeks, we will have a live recap of Dynamite. And I've never been to an AEW Dynamite before. I've been to a Rampage a few times and I've been to several pay-per-views, so this will be my first ever Dynamite at the Cow Palace.
Never been to an AEW show before. For me, this is my first one.
Was in the last time I saw wrestling at the Cow Palace was the second APW show at the Cow Palace.
Was New Japan?
Was that before? That was after?
It was after, yeah.
Okay, that was after. Okay, so yeah, the New Japan show.
Yeah, yeah. So that shows like, what, 8,000 people there? 7,000 people at that one?
And yeah.
This one is where we're at now, 3,000?
I think it's like 4,000 or less. But they're doing this thing with the tickets, so maybe they'll be able to sell a few more. Maybe get that thing up to 5, man.
I don't know. It'd be kind of cool if they keep it around 4, because I can say, hey, we're only a couple thousand off from AEW. I mean, you know.
From APW.
For our first Cow Palace show.
Was that Cody and Joey Ryan?
Yeah, yeah.
Was that in the cage?
Cody and another guy with, this is a cage match. Cody and some other guy we had on our show. Yeah, yeah.
don't worry, Cornette. No, maybe Cornette is listening.
You know, speaking of Cornette, I know you're probably not one to listen to the show, but you know, you look at the YouTube clips. He has a great breakdown of the Sammy and Roman and Cody situation.
Do you like what they did?
He liked what they did, and he is also in agreement about the keeping it with going to Cody. But what? Mm-hmm. But he's, you know, the way he broke it down was really, really, really good stuff.
I'll have to check it out. Yeah. I don't go out of my way to listen to him because he's kind of mean to Big Dave. I don't want to hear that.
He's gonna mention Big Dave at this one part.
Okay, good. All right. I gotta show my solidarity. All right. we'll be back next week for another episode of the Fight Game Podcast. So for John, I'm Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace